Welcome back to our continued discussion of Office 365 development. I'm Scott Hillier and still here with Ted Pattison. And we're going to keep looking at a deep dive into the Office 365 app model. And in this module, what we're going to be focusing on are SharePoint hosted apps. So this is module 5 of our 8s. And our agenda for this module is to do an introduction, so an overview of SharePoint hosted apps, talk a little bit about programming them in JavaScript. JavaScript is very important in SharePoint hosted apps. And then we're going to look at the different shapes that we can create for SharePoint hosted apps, in particular app parts and UI custom actions. So let's go ahead and get started. All right, so when we think about introducing this and understanding SharePoint hosted apps, it's key to understand the architecture of the SharePoint hosted apps. And there's some particular terminology that we need to understand here. Most importantly, the host web and the app web. When you create a SharePoint hosted app, basically what you're doing is creating an app that consumes an entire SharePoint site. This SharePoint site is called the app web. And the app web lives underneath the host web. And the host web is the SharePoint site where you were when you installed the app. So those two key things play an important role in that end users can interact with both the host web and the app web, and the app web is capable of interacting with the host web. And we'll see more of those as we go along. Now, the app web itself is a SharePoint site, but it's in an isolated domain. So Ted, when we have this subweb in an isolated domain, what's the point of having that in its own domain?
Well, the security model depends upon the fact that it can always tell when an app is calling in. So you have this isolation. You're in a different domain such that you can't call back to the host web in the same domain and have a piece of JavaScript calling in as if it were the user. So because SharePoint can track every single app has its own app web, has its own domain, it can track where the calls are originating from. And it gives SharePoint this basic idea that it can authenticate every single app. So it basically just makes sure that the app authenticates and we can put restrictions on what the app can do over whatever code that you might have, you know, in a full trusted farm solution, you know, where your JavaScript on a page could call in and just simulate the user.
All right, great. So if we go back and we take a look at the slide then, you'll see that each of the apps gets its own unique URL. So when you create a SharePoint hosted app, it has its own unique URL that's made up of some key pieces here, like its tenancy, an app unique identifier, the hosting domain that it's in, and the app name. And the point here is that this gives each one of these SharePoint hosted apps its own domain, which helps us enforce the same domain policy. Each one of these also has its own start page. So if you go back and take a look at the slide here, you can see a sample of the start page from the app manifest, which begins with the token app web URL, which is used to refer to the app web during the debugging process and has appended to the end of it something called standard tokens. Basically, what the standard tokens allow us to do is to pass standardized information into the app when it launches. Important things like the URL of the host web, the language, the client tag, or the product number. And we'll see as we begin to develop apps that this type of information can be used, for example, to allow the app web to talk back to the host web. So the big takeaway here is every app needs to have its own start page, and when it launches, it's going to get a bunch of key information from SharePoint during that launch. So that's the full page experience. Every app you create must have that full page experience. Apps themselves, as Ted was pointing out, also have permissions and they act as principles. When we create SharePoint hosted apps, we utilize what's known as internal authentication. And internal authentication is a simplified form of app authentication. Essentially, the way you can think about this is because the app is consuming an entire web inside of SharePoint, SharePoint really already knows about the app. It already knows that it trusts it, and it's much easier to perform authorization against something that's built into the SharePoint farm. So that's what the internal authentication is all about. And then the app itself, once it's acting as a principal, it can have its own permissions. And then we can utilize a comparison, a union, if you will, of permissions that the app has versus permissions that the user has, and make decisions about what the combination of app and user can do based on the permissions that each has. I had mentioned previously this idea of app shapes, and I said that every app is required to have a full page shape, which means that when you launch it, you're going to get a full page experience. But you can have two optional experiences as well, and that's the app part and UI custom action. The app part is really the substitute for the web part, and it allows an app to be hosted in an iframe, and that iframe sits on a page in the host web, and again, it acts sort of like web parts act. And then the UI custom action allows your app to be launched from within either the ribbon or a menu item that's on a list or a library. So you can have these different optional shapes that allow you to provide experiences to the end user in the host web in ways that are different from simply pulling up an entire full page for them.
I guess you might have one app where the full page or the start page is basically where the user gets everything done. Another app might just be there for the purpose of having three or four app parts. You still have to have the start page, but the start page might be nothing more than an about page for the app or instructions to go create app parts to make this app meaningful.
Right, yeah, that's a key thing. Since you have to have a full page experience, we do find that occasionally that full page experience is nothing more than a sort of about box or instructions for someone. Exactly right. So now, with that as kind of our understanding of where we're headed, you know, we're creating this subweb, and this subweb has permissions and it has different shapes. So how do we go about creating that SharePoint hosted app? Well, when we create the SharePoint hosted app, we are going to have an app that consists of pages. Those pages could either be ASPX pages or they could be HTML pages. We've already discussed that it uses internal authorization authentication. So in other words, we're not going to be using anything like OAuth or server-to-server high trust with these. And then when it comes to programmability, we have a significant restriction here in that SharePoint hosted apps can only use JavaScript. There's no mechanism in a SharePoint hosted app really to use anything but JavaScript. So one of the things that means is that we really have to understand how to create enterprise-level JavaScript. Lots of times, SharePoint developers haven't experienced creating an application that is entirely made of JavaScript. And Ted, what's the point of having that kind of restriction on us? Why only JavaScript in these apps?
Well, we don't have any type of server-side process. The idea is that SharePoint is going to host everything, including our pages, including our JavaScript files, but the app model says your code shall never run in a SharePoint-managed process. And so the only way to kind of get that is to move away from the SharePoint hosted apps to provider hosted apps. Now, the kind of the benefit to me of the SharePoint hosted apps is security just works. When we get to the next module and we start talking about provider hosted apps, you're going to see the developer has to focus on security and add extra code to deal with that. So there's a trade-off. There will be many people that haven't really spent as much time with JavaScript as they have with server-side .NET code, so the downside is that they have to learn the JavaScript model and be productive with it, but the upside is security just works transparently behind the scenes.
Right, and so when we're doing this JavaScript programming, we have two different application programming interfaces that we can use. We can either use the client-side object model or we can use REST. Client-side object model, as we'll see, is really kind of a Microsoft proprietary invention that attempts to bring the programming style of the server-side object model to the client, whereas REST is more of a standard way of accessing remote sources. And we'll see examples of both of those as we go along. And I should also point out that another great concern we have in this model is the ability to call across domains. So we know that we're restricted initially by the same domain policy from calling cross-domain, but there are many times when we're going to want to call cross-domain, so we'll need to look at some solutions for that problem as well as we go along. Okay, so what we're going to do is let's start off by creating a simple SharePoint hosted app so we can see what's involved in making that happen. All right, so I'm going to come down and go ahead and fire up Visual Studio, and we'll come up to the File menu and say File. I had trouble with this last time, didn't I? New Project. There we go. Did I get it? It's going to haunt me the entire time I'm doing this, just getting the new project dialog up. There we go. All right, that's better. Okay, so here I am, and now I'm going to create an app for SharePoint, and we need a place for this to go, so I'm just going to pick a simple place for us to put this, and we'll put it into our deep dive demo section here like this. Select that folder, and this will just be my intro app. How's that? It's a good name, right?
It's a very good name.
All right, so we'll go ahead and click OK. Which brings up the wizard here and asks me to pick a place where I want this to go. So this should be 2-5, I believe, right? So 2-5. And what type of hosting do we want to do? Well, we're all about SharePoint hosted in this module, so we'll go ahead and click SharePoint hosted and then say finish. Now, because I'm using Office 365, it's going to ask me to log in, of course. So we'll go ahead and provide that organizational account, watching our spelling here as we go, and password for it. Okay, click sign in, and that's going to allow us to finish up creating this. So we'll give it just a second, and then let's take a look at what we've got. So if we come over here to the Solution Explorer, what we're going to see is that we basically have one solution with one project in here called Intro App. Now, if I open this thing up, what I find interesting about this is, you know, we've got a lot of goodies in here already. So, for example, we can pop this open and see there are some pages. We also have a place for our JavaScript here. We've got a little node where we can put in some images. We've just got the app icon in there now. And a content place where we can put in things like style sheets. But notice that we've got a features and a packages folder in here. So, Ted, this looks like the kind of thing I used to do when I was making full trust solutions, right? So apparently some piece of the feature infrastructure is being leveraged here inside of SharePoint hosted apps.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's going to help us do the deployments in, and we actually get a WSP buried inside of that .app file that you were showing earlier. So that's a pretty interesting thing to note when you're looking at this. The other thing that's worth noting is if I come in here and look at this default.aspx page, which is the one page I'm getting in my project, do you notice what's missing here? I don't see anything with a CS extension. So I'm getting a default.aspx page, but no code behind.
It's not allowed.
It's not allowed. So there is no mechanism to put any kind of C# code in here. How about, could I sneak into the ASPX page and do like the old school angle bracket percent and write some code that way?
You could. Visual Studio will allow you to do it, but SharePoint would laugh
SharePoint
at you and fail your
hard
request.
Time.
Exactly
right. So that's the key takeaway, is there's absolutely nothing in here that allows you to write C# code. You're totally dependent on JavaScript. And if you come into the project type as we've created it here, you'll find this app.js file. And in this app.js file, you'll find some, you know, pre-baked code that you can use. So this thing is ready to run right out of the box. And what this thing is using is this is using the client-side object model. And the client-side object model, as we said, is designed to sort of bring the style of coding that SharePoint developers were doing on the server side into the client world. It's not a perfect transformation, but it's sort of designed to make it feel like you're doing something on the server. Now, I'm not a big fan of the code that gets put in here by default. And one of the reasons I'm not is because we have variables like the context and the user defined at the top that are defined inside the global namespace. And I really like to emphasize to developers who are beginning this process that they need to understand how to create correct JavaScript and to properly isolate it from the global namespace. So I'm going to get rid of that code that we had and go ahead and insert a snippet here. And we'll come in and insert a CSOM welcome snippet that I have. And here's something that I'm a little bit more fond of. Now, if you're not overly familiar with this style of coding, a couple of things to note here. The first is that I've wrapped all of this code in an anonymous function. And wrapping it in an anonymous function keeps it out of the global namespace, which is just good JavaScript programming. You'll also notice that I have referenced the jQuery function here, not using the dollar sign. I'm calling the jQuery function directly. And what's going to happen is the code inside of here is going to run when the jQuery library is ready. And it's basically the same code that is found in that starter project. It's just better organized. So you can see the context and the user here. And then what happens is I'm looking to get the current web and the current user. And I'm going to call the load method with the current user, which essentially asks for the scalar properties of that object, and then call execute query async, which will return my request back to SharePoint. And then if I'm successful, I'm going to write that information into the message box that's on the homepage. And if I fail, I'll see the error. But what I think is really important for people who are new to this style, they haven't seen this library before, this is really under the covers just making a call to a web service. And we've sort of abstracted it so that it doesn't feel like you're talking to web services, but in fact you are.
And also calling back to the exact same domain where the page is being served up from. So at this point, there's no need to cross domain boundaries as you're making the call.
That's right. So this is just going to work. And in fact, what we can do is come back here to Visual Studio now and just click Start. And we'll watch that that Visual Studio will give us this great F5 experience where it installs the application for us. You can see that happening in the lower left-hand corner. There's installation in process. And then when it's done doing the installation, what it's going to do is fire up a copy of the browser for us, which will launch me into, in this case, my Office 365 site. So, of course, I'm going to have to log in again.
And this is so Visual Studio has access to your Office 365 tenancy and can install the app on the fly into your developer site.
Well, and we're running it now. So I'm actually being taken into the launched browser, right? So I can't do that without logging into my tenant. And you can see that, in fact, here we are with the application essentially doing exactly what the Visual Studio default one does, but we've better structured our JavaScript. And so, you know, here we have a simple hello. Now, I'll just point out, as long as we're here, that I said we had two different ways of doing this, right? So this is the client-side object model code for creating your little hello world. But I also said that we had a REST interface that we could use. And while the client-side object model code is really more of a Microsoft thing, the REST might be a lot more standard to people who are watching this. So we could come in and insert a second snippet here, and we'll come into JavaScript, and I'll come down here to my jQuery welcome. And then here I have an example of using jQuery Ajax to make a RESTful call to get the current user here, and then success or failure functions, which do exactly the same thing. In this case, however, I'm getting back a JSON object that will contain information about the current user, and I'll show the title. So Ted, I could run this, but it will do exactly the same thing. And the key takeaway from this demo here is just that you have both of these APIs that you can work with. Now, one other thing that's worth pointing out, and hey, you know what? Maybe we'll just go ahead and run this. So let's jump back into Visual Studio, and I am going to go ahead and run this. And the reason I want to do this is because what I'd like to do is take a look at the URLs. So let's come in here, and we'll log in again. And all I want to do with this one is, you know, hopefully it's going to run the same code, right? Or same have the same behavior. That's certainly what we're expecting, because I claimed that a couple of times. And sure enough, there it is. But what I want to do is go ahead up here and grab this out. And I think we can stop the browser now. And I'm just going to give myself a new text file so we can drop this in here. And take a look at this right here. This is the URL for the app that I just created. And we can see some pretty interesting things here. You can see that I have this MS Academy dash, and then this big mess right here at the beginning of this. And this is my unique domain that is running my SharePoint hosted app. And that's what we said happened, right? That you get this unique domain. And then if I come down here to the end, you can also see those tokens I promised you that we were passing in. All right, so here's that key information, like the URL of the host web, the product number, the language, the app web URL. See all that key information that comes in. So again, this makes that point that everything runs in its own domain and upon launching receives a bunch of critical information from SharePoint about where it came from, what its host web is. And we can use that, and we will in some of the future demos here to show some interesting stuff.
Yeah, I guess one other tidbit is that, you know, it's important to think about the app that you're creating as a piece of software, but instances of the app. If you take the exact same app and install it in two different sites, you have two different instances and you're going to have different domains for those.
That's right.
So it's not like a app shares a domain across all its installed instances. They're all separate.
That's right. I can install this in multiple places and they would all have different domains. Okay, let's jump back to the slides here and keep going. So that's the basics of creating one, and actually pretty simple to do, right? Pretty easy, step by step. Next thing to talk about is a little bit about JavaScript. Now, I had already said a couple of times that you can use the client-side object model or the REST API. And here we're just going to take a look at a couple of samples on the slides of examples of doing this type of programming. So generally, if you're going to be using the REST API, you're going to find yourself using jQuery Ajax. That's basically what everybody's using. That's the standard way to do it. All the samples sort of assume that you're doing that. And your whole goal there is to create these RESTful endpoints that talk to what you want. Now, in SharePoint, all these RESTful endpoints begin with this underscore API, and then they go to something like a web or a site or the current user. And then you can continue to build out that URI to get what you want. So in this sample, we can see that we're talking to the web, the collection of lists, we're getting a particular list called contacts, and then we're looking at all of the items for that particular list. So this is just like getting an SP list item collection object. That's basically what you're asking for. And then using the select, I can say that I would only like ID, first name, title, and work phone, and then ask for them to be ordered by title and first name. So you can see that inherent within that URI is all the information necessary for me to be able to get back what I want. And that's really the key to REST. If you haven't spent a lot of time with it, it's the idea that you can create a URI that specifies everything you want in that one URI, and then SharePoint will respond by giving that to you with just the fields and the sorts that you want. The other key thing about using the REST API is these are all asynchronous calls, so you're always going to have success and failure functions. Okay, if we return to the slides then, we can also see that we can use it for not only reading things, but here's an example of creating things. Now, let's just point out some highlights here. You can see that when I'm using REST to create, I'll be targeting that items, the collection of items, and you can see that I'm passing in some data here. I'm passing in a JSON object that contains information like the metadata, which designates what kind of thing I'm creating. Here I'm creating a list item for the contacts. And you can also see I'm passing in things like the title, first name, and work phone, which is the information necessary to create that new item. Down in the header section, you can see that I'm asking for any response to come back as JSON. That's great. You'll also notice in the content type, I'm specifying I'm passing in JSON. But here's a key piece right here. Look at this X request digest down here. What happens is whenever you add something new or you delete to a SharePoint list, there's the concept of preventing cross-site request forgeries, which is the idea that some bad actor could reach into SharePoint and add items or delist items or delete list items. And in order to ensure that you are actually the client that originally made the request that got this data, you have to pass the anti-forgery token back into SharePoint, and this is known as the request digest. If you use an ASPX page, you can simply pull the request digest from the underscore underscore request digest element inside the page. If you don't have an ASPX page, you have to go through a couple of extra hops to get it, but the key takeaway here is that to perform creates or deletes like this, you need to pass the anti-forgery token back into SharePoint. But other than that, it's a pretty straightforward implementation of an Ajax, jQuery Ajax call. Okay, going back to the slides then to see again, not only can we create, but we can also do an update. The update is very similar to the create, but you'll notice an additional couple of headers here where I have an if match and an XHTTP method. Takeaway here is that SharePoint supports the concept of e-tags, which allows you to do versioning and optimistic concurrency, and the idea of patching, which allows you to do partial updates. And finally, we can delete. So here we are with a simple delete call. Notice the type is delete, and I'm passing in the ID of an item that I want to delete. In this case, I'm also passing in the anti-forgery token, as well as working with e-tags to make sure that I have the current version. All right, so that's a quick look at what you can do with the REST API. And we can also use the CSOM API. So here's an example that uses the client-side object model API to do a read, and it's actually doing a CAML query. So if you're watching this module with us and you're an old school SharePoint developer, you'll be well familiar with the concept of a CAML query, which is an XML-based language that allows you to do a query. And you can see just by looking at the XML query in this slide here that it's pretty clear that we're asking for the title, the first name, and you know we're ordering it by certain fields within that query, and that's all just really built up as an XML nugget. We can take that XML nugget and then apply it to a particular list. So down here you can see that I have a list, I'm doing get lists, get by title contact, so pulling the contact list out, and then I can say here's the key, list.getItems, and pass in that CAML query, and that's going to bring back to me after an asynchronous call the results of the read on that list. The key takeaway here for people that are new to this performs essentially the same function as what we were doing in REST, but again, this is really more of a Microsoft proprietary library that looks a lot more familiar to old school SharePoint developers than perhaps the REST style does. Just like we could do with REST, we can perform the other operations as well. So returning to the slides, we can see that there's the ability to create list items as well. When we create things using the client-side object model, we often have to fill out these creation information objects. So you can see this new sp.listItemCreationInformation object, and then setting all the different properties before, again, making an asynchronous call to create the new one. We can do updates in a similar way. So here we are just doing an update on a list item. And again, if you're an old school SharePoint developer, this is pretty familiar, right, Ted? I mean, because I used to do this exact thing on the server-side code where we would set property values and then call update on a list item, and that would make the change.
That would send things back. You know, as you kind of think through, because it is generally a choice you get to make whether you're going to use CSOM or the REST API, and many people programming JavaScript feel that the REST API is just an easier approach, more sure. natural code. But then you look to CSOM, and CSOM handles the request digest behind the scenes and makes it transparent to you, right. the developer.
Good,
so there's just different trade-offs.
Right, so good point. You'll notice in that code, you never saw me handle the anti-forgery token. But if you were to fire up Fiddler, you'd see it go. So it happens, all of that stuff happens, but it's done for you.
The library is just doing it behind the scenes on your behalf when you use CSOM. And you have to do it yourself using REST.
And the key takeaway is both are legitimate ways to program your app. There's a level of comfort. There's some debate and discussion within the community that's pretty healthy about which one is better under what circumstances. But both, perfectly legitimate ways to do it. So returning to the slides then, not only can we do the updates, but you know here's the simple code for delete. And so the real takeaway from all this is that both of these APIs are fully featured ways to perform CRUD operations across lists and libraries, as well as many other things. But the choice to make really comes from your skill set and where your skills lie and what it is that you're trying to do. Okay, so the next thing to consider is, you know, when we're looking at the client-side object model or REST, we are sort of thinking about this interaction directly with a list. But we'd already said that sometimes the things that we want to talk about are not in the same domain we are. So if the list we want to talk to is in the host web, for example, that's a completely different domain. And so we're going to need mechanisms to talk across domains if we're going to create effective apps. And the first one we're going to talk about is the cross-domain library. The cross-domain library is a mechanism that we can use to get across domains even though we have this same domain policy. And the way it works is that it uses this special library in SharePoint called the sp.requestExecutor library. And you can find that in the layout directory in SharePoint, the layouts directory in SharePoint. And you can reference it in your app in a couple of different ways. One is in a SharePoint hosted app, you could certainly just reference it directly. One of the neat things about being in a subweb in SharePoint is that the well-known layouts directory is well-known to your app. So it's easy enough for you to reference libraries that are in that layouts directory, and you can do that in the standard way. The second way to do it, if you look at the slide here, is to load dynamically. This becomes important in some other scenarios, but we'll take a look at it now, where we can use the jQuery getScript function to actually reach out and grab a library and load it as if it had been referenced, but it's done dynamically in code. So both of these are legitimate ways to reference the cross-domain library. When thinking about how the cross-domain library works, basically what's happening is you have the app web. In this case, we're talking about the app web perhaps trying to talk to the host web. And the app web, when it loads up the cross-domain library, implements an iframe that loads this very well-known page called appwebproxy.aspx. And then what happens is the app web communicates across the iframe using HTML post message commands. And the call to the host web is actually done by this app web proxy page. Now, initially that may seem like a lot to absorb, but really this is a tried and true mechanism for talking across domains. When you have JavaScript that can't talk across domains, just ask something on the server to do it for you, because the server's not limited by that same idea. So we pull something from the server here that is in a well-known place and then talk across the iframe to it, and it acts as our proxy to make the call and isn't subject to those same domain policy restrictions. All right, so if we're going to use the cross-domain library, we can return to the slides here and take a look at some code snippets. So you can use the cross-domain library with REST or the client-side object model. Here we have an example of using it with REST. Note that instead of using jQuery AJAX, what we're doing is spinning up a new SP request executor, and we're using as the argument to create that the app web URL. And then we call the execute async method, passing in the URL that we want to talk to. So we're still creating a RESTful URI. But Ted, note that when you do this, right, look at, you can see the yellow code there. What I'm doing with that is I'm actually changing the reference for this particular call from the app web to the host web by doing that. And yet I can still kind of use the same URIs that I was creating before, right?
So basically you're calling in through one endpoint that's allowed. You always have to route in through the app web to do this. But you're basically telling SharePoint, I don't want to perform the operations on the app web. And you can basically just contextually shift to the target site that you want to do your CSAM or REST programming against.
Right. And I think what you just said is a great point of understanding, which is when you want to talk cross-domain, what you find is that you have to talk into the app web, because that's the thing that's in your domain, that's the thing you have access to. But then you're saying, hey, now that I'm over here, I want to shift my context and talk to the host web. And again, it's a way to skip past the restrictions put on you by the same domain policy. Well, we can do it with REST. We can also do it with CSAM. So taking a look at the slides, we can see the equivalent code here done in the client-side object model. So once again, we're shifting the context, this time using the sp.appcontext site to shift that context. But again, we're calling into that app web and then shifting the context over. Okay, so this is a really common thing that we want to do. So let's just take a look at an example of performing some CRUD operations against a list that's in that host web. All right, let's go to let's go back to our site here. Go ahead and log in. And I'll show it first, and then we'll talk a little bit about how it's done. So what we're gonna do, again, is take a list that's in the host web and talk to it from the app. Again, a very common kind of thing to do. So let's go here to our deep dive site for this particular module. Now, taking a look at this, what you're going to see is over here on the left, we have a simple announcements list. So here's a simple announcements list right here. You can see there's nothing in it, right? And what we'll do is we're going to come here to the site contents now, and we're going to launch an app that I've already built called Host Web CRUD Operations. We're going to come here, click on this thing, launch it. And when I do, we get a pretty simple interface here that's showing the announcements. You'll notice there's nothing in it. And now what we can do is come in and add an announcement. So we'll say Microsoft Virtual Academy classes available. So let's make an announcement here, okay? And we're gonna go ahead and add the item. Now it's really important, right? Pay attention that up here, this URL is in this app web URL, separate from that host URL in a different place. I'm gonna go ahead and click add item, and it looks like something got added there. Now, we're gonna come up to our navigation and go back to that same site that we were at, take a look at that same announcements list we were on, and then look at that. Sure enough, we've added to it. So let's just stop for a second and really absorb what just happened there, right? We had JavaScript running in an app web in a completely different domain that was able to reach into the host web and manipulate a list that was there. Very common scenario. Okay, how do we make that happen? Well, if we come back now to Visual Studio, we can just go ahead and crack open the sample for this one. And this is going to be our, let's see, make sure we're in the right spot. Here it is, deep dive into SharePoint, demos, host web CRUD, looking good. Let's go ahead and open that one. We'll save that. Okay, so this is just a SharePoint hosted app, but all the fun happens here inside of app.js. So you can see that I've got myself a function up here, an anonymous function containing my code. We've got our CSOM stuff in here. And what we're doing is working our way through a couple of different operations here where we're loading up the view model for this particular list, right? So what we're doing here is we've got this announcements code buried in another library, and we're making use of something called promises to return those values and bind and then knockout to bind them into the UI. And while we don't have a tremendous amount of time to go through promises and knockout, I would just recommend to anybody who is unfamiliar with the JavaScript concept of promises and the library for knockout, that they put that on their list of things to investigate. But at any rate, if we come in here now to this library I've created for list items, you'll see that I'm getting an app context here against the app web URL. And then just like in the slide I showed you, we're getting a new sp.appcontext using the host web URL. So it's this that's going to allow me then to transform that context, so change the what CSOM is operating on from the web application that we're in, the web app, to the host web. And here, we're going to go ahead and get the list, and we're getting it by its title, and that list name is going to be announcements. And this is basic CSOM code here. Load up the list, do a list creation item that adds a new item to the announcements with a particular title, and then calls execute query async and provides succeed and failure functions. But the key to really understanding what's happening with the cross-domain library resides in these three lines of code right here, where you spin up a new sp.appcontext site and you transform that context from the app web to the host web and then proceed with normal CSOM code to operate on the list, but now you're operating on something that's in the host web. Okay, let's jump back to the slides here and press on with some other goodies we've got. So next on our list of things to do is to talk about app parts. Now remember we said that there were some full page experiences were required, but you had this optional experience of an app part. So an app part is really the substitute for a web part. It's how we do web parts now without having to put code on the server. So it allows functionality to be added to the page, similar to what we had with web parts. The app part, though, lives in an iframe on that host web. When we define the app part within the project itself, you'll see when I show you the code that we use something called the client web part to make that happen. It's a declarative element to make that happen. And it's important also to note that while I'm showing you this idea of an app part in a SharePoint hosted app, it's also valid in provider hosted apps that we'll talk about later. So we're choosing it to cover it in this module, but you certainly could create it as a provider hosted app as well. Returning to the slides, talk a little bit about the idea of the client web part, which is a declarative element that references the page that's supposed to be displayed in the iframe. So this is really no more than taking a page from your app and showing it in an iframe, but it does also allow you to create some properties as well, so you can have properties just like a web part has properties and have them show up on the page. Here's a sample of the client web part camel. We'll talk a little bit more about that when I bring up sample code for it. Let's jump out and take a look at an example of that. So I'm going to go back over to the same place we were at inside of my Office 365 environment. And then let's just go ahead and jump back to our homepage here. And here on my deep dive into SharePoint hosted app page, here is an app part. I have this app part, it's called the Welcome App Part, and you can see it's showing my picture and it's welcoming me by name. So it's figured out who I am, and it's actually gone to my profile and pulled my picture down. You can see it's the same picture as the one that's up here on the title bar, and it's welcoming me. If I come into this page and I edit the page, you'll see some pretty nice behavior here where it looks a lot like a regular web part. So I could come up, for example, to some other area, click on Insert, Insert App Part, and then there's the Welcome App Part right there, and I can simply click Add and it will go in. If I have an existing one, I can drop down the menu just like you'd expect, and I can say Edit the Web Part. And when I do, it brings up the same property dialog that you would have for web parts that you're used to in, say, SharePoint 2010. You can also do custom properties. This one has a custom property in the configuration section that says Show Image. So if I uncheck this, then what will happen is my app part will welcome you, but it won't try to show your picture. All right, so how do we make this happen? Well, let's jump back into Visual Studio. And I'm going to go ahead and open up the code for this. Here's my welcome client web part code. Now, if you had a SharePoint hosted app and you wanted to add this functionality, the way to do it is to come in and right click on this thing and say add new item. And when you add the new item, in your list of available things will be the client web part. So you simply add the client web part in, and then what that's going to do is ask you if you'd like to use an existing page or create a new page that will be iframed in as the app part. And then what happens is you'll get an element here. So I have one called Welcome Web Part, and it simply is going to put in a chunk of XML here, camel, that defines what you want. So taking a little bit closer look at it, you can see this content section here is saying that the page we want iframed in is welcome.aspx. And when this page gets launched, it's going to receive the standard tokens that we've already discussed, but it's also going to receive a query string parameter called showImage, which is mapping to the property that I showed you in the dialog. And the definition for that property is done here inside this properties section, where you can see that showImage is a Boolean value. It shows up in that web browser so that the user can set it. And it's going to be passed into me, and the token that's used for the value is underscore name of the property underscore. So Ted, I think you can see it's pretty straightforward, right? You're going to pass in these query parameters, and then your system can take whatever action it wants based on these parameters.
You just have to know the magic handshake that you have a property name, and then in your query string, you have to use the property name, both preceded and followed by the underscore. So you're kind of creating a dynamic token on the fly that they're going to take the value out of the content database, swap it in there before they create the query string to pass out.
Exactly. And then once you've got that in place, you can really take any action you want. So for us, I'll just pause on this code right here and show you that the action I'm taking involves a RESTful call using jQuery AJAX. I'm at that underscore API, but this time I'm talking to sp.userprofiles.peoplemanager. So in the samples that we've looked at before, I was doing CRUD operations. I was reading and writing to lists, but it's important to understand that you actually have access to a lot of the SharePoint services as well. Here, again, I'm reading the profile for the current user, and that's what's allowing me to grab the display name for the person and their URL, their picture URL, so that I can welcome them by one or the other, depending upon what properties you've asked for. Okay, so that's an app part. The next thing is UI custom actions. UI custom actions allow us to extend the ribbon.
Have a frog in your throat?
There you go. The ribbon or the edit control block, the ECB, right? I always tell everybody, if you want to sound like a real SharePoint professional, never say drop down menu for the list item. It's always the ECB, right? You say edit control block a few times, you sound like you know what you mean. But the edit control block is just a little drop down menu on a list item. So it's going to allow me to launch from either the ribbon or the edit control block, and then it's going to launch a target page in my app, so it's going to take me to one of those target pages, and it supports the addition of a bunch of tokens that we can use, because if I'm going to launch from the ribbon or the ECB, I may want to know what view you were looking at before you launched, I may want to know what list item you were looking at before you launched, so that I can take some kind of appropriate action. If we go back to the slides, you can see the camel that's involved in declaratively creating this action. The key thing down here is that what most of this does is defines the button that you're going to click on. What's boxed in down there at the bottom is the action that's going to take. And just note that we're going to the app web URL, some page, in this case you've got this print list page that it goes to, and then what parameters you want. In this case you can see we're passing in the site URL and the list ID. So the idea is that you're going to go to your app, some page in your app, and then that thing is going to be able to take action based on parameters that were passed in. Okay, let's take a look at an example of one. Again, we'll zip on back here to my site, and what we're going to do is, let's see, we're looking for our contacts list here. Okay, so here I've got a contacts list. So this is just a regular old contacts list. There's nothing exciting about this contacts list. I didn't do anything special to it, but what I did was I extended the menu that was associated with the edit control block. So we can drop down the edit control block by clicking the ellipsis here. And what I've done is added this item down here to the bottom, show profile. So basically what this does is it, for every contact list you have, it adds this ability. And what it does is it takes you to the app, you'll watch me navigate to the app, and it brings in information about the contact you were looking at so that you can then go read their profile and in this case, show it or do other interesting things. So what it's doing is it's binding the list item that's in a regular contact list to the broader profile of that person, so it'll allow you to take some kind of action. So let's see how this one was done. If I go back and open up the code for this guy, this is going to be my contact profile project here. Open up that one. Okay, and so if we were interested in adding this, we could come in and say add new item. And on here, you can see there's a ribbon item custom action and a menu item custom action. So that's how you get it into your SharePoint hosted app. And then once you add that, you're going to see it show up here as a node. Here's my show profile. And if I double click that, you can see that what I've done here is I've bound this custom action into a list, and the list type I've bound to is list type 105. So this is, if you're an old school SharePoint developer, this is very similar to what we did with server-side solutions that would extend the edit control block. But in this case, I'm navigating to a web page within my app, default.aspx, and you can see that I'm passing in information like the list item ID and the list ID you were looking at, because it's going to become important for me to know which item you were looking at if I'm going to go ahead and produce some more information about it, in this case showing their profile. If I go into the script section here, we can just jump into the app.js and take a quick look at what's going on. And basically what we've got going on here now is that when this runs, we're going to pull out that key information. There's the list ID and the list item ID of the thing that you were looking at. And then I've got some functions I call, again, bound up with promises here, but you can see the sort of sequence of events. The first thing I need to do is get your display name. So the first call I'm going to make is one that says, I have information about your account name and about the item you were looking at, and now I need to get the display name from the list so I know what your display name is. Once I get your display name, I'm going to do sort of a reverse lookup to pull up your account name here, and then ultimately I'm going to use the account name to pull out information from your profile, which you can see me doing here. Now, behind this code that you're looking at are the appropriate REST or CSOM calls to make it happen. But really, the key thing to understand about extending the ribbon or the edit control block is that I was able to get this information passed into my JavaScript telling me what you were looking at so that I could then use any code I want to take that information and do interesting things with it. Okay, so that's the UI custom action. So what we've seen here in our introduction is we've seen how the SharePoint hosted apps are built, right? So we understand that they are a subweb underneath the host web. We've taken a look at actually building them. How do we, you know, what are the steps necessary to build them? We took a little of a look at the REST API and CSAM API. Now, it's important to understand that both of those are very large, they're complex, it's a broad area for you to study in, but we took a look at the basics of how to get that going. And then we took a look at the different shapes, including app parts and custom UI actions. And that everything in a nutshell that that you would need to get started on SharePoint hosted apps. And what we're going to do now is we're going to go ahead and take a 10-minute break, and then we're going to come back and continue talking about app development, this time with provider hosted apps.